I call Senate Resources to order. Today is February 21st. The time is 8:02 a.m. Present on the committee with me today, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, Senator French. Senator McGuire will be a bit tardy. She's on her way, and I'm sure Senator Machicki will be joining us shortly as well. So today we are taking up Senate Bill 138 again, and this morning I would like to bring forward a blank committee substitute for Senate Bill 138. The committee substitute incorporates concepts that have been brought forward by individual committee members during our hearings and so forth. We'll have a chance to hear from members on the features they offered in the CS today. Sponsors of ideas that aren't in the CS will be discussed this afternoon. We'll bring those amendments forward this afternoon. Mr. Vice Chair, do I hear a motion?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the committee adopt the Senate Resources Committee substitute for Senate Bill 138, that's version N, as a work draft.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator Dyson. I'll object for purposes of discussion, and I'll ask my staff, Lindsay Williams, to come forward and walk us through the changes. While she's being seated, just be aware we have representatives here from the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Revenue, and the Department of Law. All right, and let the record reflect that Senator Machicki has joined us. All right, Ms. Williams, if you would go ahead and proceed walking us through the changes in the CS.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lindsay Williams, staff to Senator Giesel. The first change that was made is a change that was made in the title at the recommendation of our legislative legal drafter. The change is basically conforming changes. Next, we will move to page 3, section 1. A new section was added that involves intent language. This intent language broadly captures what is in the HOA. Briefly walking through, oil and gas development of and commercialization of gas is a vital public interest to the state of Alaska. It recognizes that much of the infrastructure will be within the bounds of local governments. There will be many benefits to the state, including employment opportunities, tax and royalty payments, and natural gas to communities. Number 4 talks about negotiations and that those must be in the interest of the state and local governments. And a reference for that in the HOA is Article 9. B speaks to the DNR commissioner and that it's necessary he be able to negotiate contracts and enter into agreements which will then be subject to legislative approval. That is found in Article 7 of the Heads of Agreement. Moving on, number 2 under B talks about access and pro-expansion principles, delivery of gas to Alaskans, and payment in lieu of taxes. References for that can be found in Article 6 of the Heads of Agreement, as well as Article 9.3.1. Number 3 talks about negotiating separately with the producers for the sale or disposition of our natural gas. That can be found in Article 8.3.1 of the Heads of Agreement. And number 4 speaks of employment for Alaska residents, and that is found in Article 11 of the Heads of Agreement.
Very good. Any questions? Yes, Senator Fairclough.
Madam Chair, I just point out a drafting error on page 3, at least I believe it is. Page 3, line 19 should be 4. Page 3, line 23 should be 5.
Numbering.
Yes.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you. All right. Go ahead. Yes, excuse me, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. I guess I'd like some, at some point, to hear a little discussion about number 4 under B. Particularly the project labor agreements and so on, but that doesn't have to be now.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, this almost identically matches the language that is found in the Heads of Agreement under Article 11, and so what the legislative intent tried to do is capture those ideas and move them right into the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Senator, back to that.
Senator Fairclough.
Madam Chair, could I ask, is that consistent with the language that was in AGEA?
It is not, through the chair, it is not consistent with the language that was in AGEA.
Further questions? Yes, Senator French.
Actually, just while we're, it's something that, while we're on the subject of this section and the contracts, I'm looking at page 3, sub B, intended the legislature to provide the Commissioner of Natural Resources with authority necessary to enter short-term commercial agreements and negotiate contracts and develop terms for inclusion in proposed contracts. There's three sort of references: short-term commercial agreements, negotiate contracts, and then inclusion in proposed contracts. Is it, I guess I want to be clear whether every single one of those instruments will come to us for approval, or whether there's a whether that's unnecessarily binding the hands of the commissioner. I just don't know. There's it seems like there may be many agreements that we are working on as we go towards a big project, and if every single one of them needs to come to us, I think we should at least know what, if that's the plan.
Senator French, through the chair, I would defer that to Deputy Commissioner Mike Pawlowski.
While the Deputy Commissioner is coming forward, I can tell you that there is a place in here, I would have to find it, where I have changed one of the words from they may come to the legislature to they shall come to the legislature. And it's deeper back here in the bill, and we will come to it. But in the meantime, Deputy Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mike Pawlowski, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. The question Senator French is raising actually takes us to the section that you're referencing as well, Madam Chair, and that's Section 11 of the bill, found in the committee substitute version N on page 13. And the question Senator French raises is an important one, that there is a healthy balance between unnecessarily binding the flexibility that needs to occur in the negotiation of commercial agreements. At the same time, there's a complete recognition that for contracts, the binding documents that will move this project forward, those do need to be subject to legislative review. And so what you see is a distinction on page 13, line 13 to 14, that when it's in a commercial agreement that has a duration of not more than 2 years for project services, that is something the DNR commissioner can enter into that does not have to come back to the legislature. However, number 11, found on page 13, lines 15 through 19, when it is a contract that is going to be binding, that contract is not effective unless the legislature authorizes the governor to execute that contract.
Follow up, Senator French?
No, thank you.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you're here. This language I just asked about on page 4, line 13, 14, does that's this project labor agreement words here? I guess I'm interested in the intention and or effect of that. Does it have the effect that no contractor, subcontractor, or supplier can be involved in this job unless they are union?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, what I'd actually do is turn members' attentions to the heads up agreement, referencing the concepts that are included in the heads up agreement broadly to guide the intent of the legislation. That's in section 2. Which is found on page 16 of the key section that you're
agreement.
Looking for,
no,
is,
oh, okay.
Is 11.2, which says prior to construction, the Alaska LNG parties, that's the companies that are directly engaged in the Alaska LNG project, commit to negotiate in good faith project labor agreements for the Alaska LNG project. And so what it's recognizing is there's a process going forward to work on those projects that in principle the parties are all agreeing that that process in good faith will continue during the development prior to construction of the project.
Yeah, I get that. I got it. I still want to know, is the effect that no non-union contractors will be involved in suppliers?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I do not believe that is the intent, but it's impossible to describe the outcome until in good faith the parties get into those negotiations.
Follow-up, Senator Dyson?
Yeah, pardon my being pedantic here. So does that mean that non-union contractors and suppliers can enter into the negotiation process?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I think the key contemplated here is multiple agreements. There will be, if you look at the scale of this project, there are going to be opportunities for all Alaska businesses to be involved in this project. Just anything this large is going to demand that. So we never, I believe in the administration, saw this as limiting. It's a recognition that working with all of the workforce to provide the business, labor, and expertise to build these projects can be critical, because 10 to 15,000 people at peak employment is almost in an order of magnitude bigger than any project being considered in the state of Alaska right now.
Follow-up, Senator Dyson?
Yeah, you didn't answer my question. Yes or no, will non-union contractors and suppliers be able to work on this project?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I think that, Senator Dyson, if you look at the totality of the words in item 4, you'll see broad statements like contracts with Alaska businesses, employment of Alaska residents. It's not restrictive.
Now, respectfully, but that's great language, but it doesn't address the point. It just says nice things about everybody will get a shot at it and so on and so forth, and doesn't get right down to the issue. And please understand, I'm not against project labor agreements. On big projects like this, labor rest and continuity is a huge factor that can easily overwhelm any savings or whatever else can have, you know, from a non-union contractor on the job. But on the record, we've said that non-union contractors can participate, and there's nothing here that precludes them.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I'd be clear to say there's nothing here that precludes them. The actual details of the agreement, I am not a labor lawyer. I've not ever been involved in the negotiations. I'm providing you my perception of what the language enables.
Well, if the administration in its totality has any different view than that, I'd enjoy knowing that. But thank you.
Further questions? Excuse me, I didn't notice your hand was up. Was it?
It was earlier. Okay. I had changed my mind.
But, all right.
But I'm okay. I'd like to make comment, if I may. I just, in a project like this, many of the trades that typically build, you know, whether the pipeline part or the liquefaction or the gas processing facility, many of the trades happen to be union, but in a job of this scale, there's no way you can satisfy the labor requirements within state union folks, period. And many of the trades simply aren't union. So I don't think anyone is leaning one way or another toward a union. I don't think anyone sitting here is not a, you know, union supporter or non-union supporter, depending on what they choose. But if anyone was going to try to drive that line, they would be putting out-of-state workers at priority ahead of in-state Alaskan workers, and I hope that's never the case moving forward.
Thank you. Further questions? All right. Thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner.
Moving on to Section 11, page 13. This section deals with sharing confidential information with the legislature. Version A of the bill previously read, confidential information obtained under this paragraph may be shared with the legislature only in committees held in executive session or under confidentiality agreements. This change removes may and inserts shall.
Just a, Madam Chair, if we can just have a second to compare the two languages. I looked through the bill last night, and that was one aspect that didn't jump out at me. So on the A version, where was the language? What page do you know?
Gesundheit.
Senator French, through the chair, the original language was on page 12, line 12. The change is now on page 13, line 29. Changing.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so
may
much.
May to shall.
Further questions? All right. Go ahead and proceed.
Moving on to section 14, which is found on page 16, we're calling this change the errant and. The DNR commissioner may propose three modifications relating to switching between royalty in kind and royalty in value, establishing a fair market value for royalty gas, and establishing a fixed royalty rate. Line 29, following market, there used to be an and there. We've removed this and because, in reality, the DNR commissioner may only do three of, you know, two of these items, possibly not all three. In keeping with this same change, page 17, line 18, following market, the word and was also removed.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first notation, so I'm not on the right page. Could you please give me the notation again?
Senator Faircloth, through the chair, page 16, line 28, and page 17, line 18.
Let the record reflect that Senator McGuire has joined us. Welcome. Any other questions on that change? Senator Machiki.
Yeah, I mean, one that was important to me was the 12.5%. Can you cover that as well? Is that what you're doing right now? I'm sorry.
Senator Machiki, through the chair, I was just getting to that.
Got you. Thank you.
Keeping on these same pages, there was a change that was offered by two of the members that establishes the royalty rate may not go below 12.5. Madam Chair?
Thank you. Senator Machiki and Senator French offered this change. Would either of you like to speak to the change? Senator Machiki.
Just very briefly, it's the 12.5% is essentially what guarantees our permanent fund dividend contributions. I think that's important to everyone. I think it was just missed in the first version.
Any questions about that one?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator French.
It has been, and I'm sorry if we've gone over this. It's just we've covered a lot of ground, and it's probably been answered at some point. But maybe someone can walk me through how, given that we're now taking the royalty gas in kind, how a quarter of that gets deposited into the permanent fund. It's been a puzzle, and I'm sure it's we've probably covered it. But I just while we're on this point, it'd be a good to go over again.
It's a great question, and I believe we have an expert on this, Commissioner Balash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joe Balash. I'm the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Natural Resources. And through the Chair, Senator French, we're going to continue to keep track of our royalty interest. Even though we will take it in kind, there will be transportation and liquefaction charges that get deducted from those royalty interests, those royalty values, and it'll be the net then of that value that gets evaluated for the 25% constitutional deposit into the permanent fund. So we're still going to have to keep track of royalty gas versus tax gas and account for those and exactly what accounting procedures will be employed is going to be a function of these agreements that come forward next year so that we can very clearly say and identify what part of the state's revenue stream is royalty, and of that, 25% goes back to the permanent fund.
Further questions?
On a separate point, but I think Senator Faircloth has one on this one.
Senator Faircloth?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that those that are following, it is not a pre-gone conclusion that we're taking our gas in kind. It's an option for Alaskans. So just if I'm wrong, please let me know, but I just want to make sure that those following today understand it's an option.
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, that's an excellent point. The The heads of agreement contemplates that the other parties will be able to work with us to satisfy our concerns on risks associated with going in kind, that they will help us with mitigation measures to deal with those risks. And supposing that happens, then we're prepared to go in kind. The statutes direct us to start there. So whether we're talking about an in-kind sale or an in-value accounting, we're still going to have to keep track of what portion of the revenue stream is royalty, and 25% of that stream will be deposited in the permanent fund annually.
Further questions on that point? All right, seeing none. Senator French, you had a second question?
Thank you, and it's about the royalties from Point Thompson, because while we're all comfortable with a 12.5% royalty from Prudhoe, the Point Thompson royalties are quite a bit higher. And, you know, I had tried to sort of capture the idea of this simple amendment in a bigger amendment that would have addressed Point Thompson. And so maybe you can just talk to us about how much wiggle room there's still left with a 12.5% sort of bottom line with respect to the negotiations on the Point Thompson leases, who have much, much higher royalty rates.
Through the chair, Senator French, thank you for the opportunity to talk about this a little bit, because I think it's an important point that Alaskans need to understand. In no way, shape, or form are we talking about reducing those base royalty rates. What we're talking about are those instances where we have a sliding scale royalty or a net profit share lease that has something that goes in addition to the base royalty rate. Oftentimes, those types of leases have a base royalty rate of 12.5, and what you see then is basically an addition. What we're going to be seeking here is a way to come up with a fixed number that's fair to us as the landowner for that particular provision, be it an NPSL or a sliding scale. And an example would be a lease that starts at 12.5% and, depending upon the triggers in the lease, slides up to as high as 20%. And so in that particular situation, what we would be seeking is a number between 12.5 and 20. I'm going to be arguing very strongly for a number closer to 20. The counterparties, I'm sure, will be looking for a number closer to 12.5. We're going to have to come up with a fair methodology to land on a number somewhere in between. And with regard to the leases that are in place at Point Thompson that don't have an NPSL, that don't have a sliding scale, they will be unaffected. And so we will retain that higher royalty interest at Point Thompson that we have relative to Prudhoe Bay. And that is going to create an issue, because with royalty rates of a different percentage between those two fields, which field comes on first and in what volume is going to affect our overall share of the gas. And it might be in the beginning days or years of production and operation of the project that, you know, we might be a little long or short depending on which field is coming on first. In the long run, we expect there's going to be a 75-25 mix of those two fields' production, and that's where we get to a blended number, something like 13%. In order to make sure that we don't get stuck with too much or too little gas, we're going to need a balancing agreement that makes sure that in the event one field or the other is producing more than that 75-25 ratio, that there's an accounting for the gas and that there's a makeup right and an opportunity. And that's going to be important for us. It's also going to be very important for the other parties to this agreement, because nobody's going to want to be stuck in that position of having either too much capacity or too little capacity in the pipe.
Thank you.
Follow up? Any other questions? Very good. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, moving on to Section 30, which is found on page 28. This section deals with tax as gas.
Let's pause for just a second. Ms. Williams, I'll let everybody get to the page. All right, go ahead.
And we're looking at line 4 on page 28. The title previously read, Payment in Kind of Tax for Gas. The title now reads, Payment in Gas of Tax for Gas. So in keeping with consistency, the heads of agreement uses the term tax as gas or tag. In the HOA, tag is defined in Article 1 under definitions, and it's also found in Article 8.2 in the heads of agreement. There were several instances under A and B in Section 30 where we removed the word kind or in kind, and it was replaced with the word gas. Specifically, on line 4 in the title, we removed the word kind and inserted the word gas. Line 8, following the word pay, we deleted A and inserted in gas the. After tax, we deleted the words in kind. Line 10, we deleted in kind, and following section, we inserted the word is. And on line 13, we deleted the word kind and inserted the word gas.
So in summary, removing that expression, tax in kind.
Madam Chair, that is correct. Keeping in this section, on line 14, the last sentence previously read, the producer shall pay the tax in kind by delivering that 10% of the gas to the state at the entrance of the transportation facility specified by the state. Entrance of the transportation facility specified by the state was removed and replaced with point of production. Point of production is defined in Section 46 on pages 49 and 50 of the bill. And yesterday, as Deputy Commissioner Pulaski mentioned, this change would provide clarity to the producers as well as the state.
Okay, let's give members a minute to take a look at page 49 where the definition is. Any questions on the point of production? It is something we talked about yesterday. Seeing no questions, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moving on to the last change, it is found on page 50. A new section was added under section 49, amending uncodified law, and this also was an item that was brought forward by one of the members.
So, section 49, it's uncodified law, starts out the development of a plan for residents to participate in ownership of a North Slope natural gas pipeline. And this was a piece that Senator McGuire would like to see included, so it is here in the CS. Senator McGuire, would you like to speak to the this
sure,
section?
I would, Madam Chair, and thank you. I think this is a great vehicle for this to be in so that we don't get ahead of ourselves. This is the opportunity that Alaskans have for a gas line, and I think it's the best chance, we've all discussed that here, that we've had in years because of the alignment. And the point behind this provision, we talked about this back in 2008 and 9 when we were going through the omnibus energy work. But at that moment in time, there really wasn't anything close to coming to fruition. And now we actually have something before Alaskans, and we're talking about Alaska itself investing as an equity owner. And the word alignment has come up over and over again, and it made me start thinking about the fact that I think one of the elements that possibly is missing, my generation, all of us who are lifelong Alaskans who've grown up here, we have that instinctive alignment with the industry because we were here before the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, so we got to see the Alaska without the benefit of that industry, and then we got to see it with. There are over 60% of the Alaskan public that have lived here 7 years or less. And it strikes me that as we've gone through these oil tax debates, the discussion about getting gas to Alaskans and other things that perhaps were lacking alignment in recent years. So Alaskans need to know that they're getting something out of this partnership that they have with the oil and gas industry, and to start feeling it in a real tangible way. And I think the more opportunities that we can create for that, the better alignment we have moving forward, and the better partnership we have. Because if you've got two partners that are always suspicious of each other and always sort of moving against each other, especially when that's your bread and butter, that's 90% of what comes into your state, that's not healthy. So the idea behind this, I introduced the bill itself and directed a way to do it. And upon discussion with Department of Revenue, I thought better to allow them to direct them to come up with a plan, because there are Securities and Exchange Commission issues. There are a lot of different ways that this can be executed, but I know that it's an idea that many people have discussed in Alaska, that they think it's a good idea. We have the Pick, Kick, Click, Give program, which allows Alaskans to look at that permanent fund dividend, which is a reflection of the earnings they get out of the ground, and then invest it in charitable causes. And why not give them a chance to invest in a piece of the pipeline? So that's what's behind this. And I appreciate you, Madam Chair, allowing me to work with your office to include this into this bill. And I want to say thank you to Mr. Pawlowski and to Mr. Balash for allowing me to put it as a part of the governor's bill.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. I appreciate the broad language that you've put in. You know, I know a lot of Alaskans say, yes, I want to buy a share, and yet it's a complex process of buying a share, so to speak, as you mentioned, the Securities and Exchange Commission laws. So you've crafted this very broadly, asking them to look at how this might be done according to the law. So I appreciate that. Any questions on this section? All right, great. Ms. Williams?
And Madam Chair, that sums up the rest of the changes in the CS.
All right. Excuse me. Any other questions about the changes in the CS? Yes, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, Mr. Pawlowski. I apologize for being pedantic about this project labor agreement. One of the issues that has come up half a dozen times in the years that I've been here is there's one of the major construction unions in the state, happens to be one that I've been a member of, who has in their own bylaws said that they cannot take any new members in from Alaska, including ones that are licensed in the state, as long as there's anybody on the books in Seattle or Portland. And they certainly said that was a restriction on doing the very thing that we all want. It's getting Alaska residents jobs. How do we solve that problem? Is there any way that we can solve it?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, Mike Pawlowski, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue. In all honesty, we are so far outside of my personal comfort zone or ability to weigh in any way on that issue. We're happy to bring Department of Labor or work with the commissioner.
It can be done offline, and I would be glad to have that.
Thank you, sir.
Actually, Senator Dyson, I'd like to have it done in committee. I think it's a burning question, and so perhaps by this afternoon we could have the Department of Law join us.
Right.
I think it's a great question, and the whole committee should hear about it.
And Madam Chair,
yes, Senator Dyson.
Continue. The other one happens to be another union. And my father was a long time. Has to do with Teamsters. Now we have in this state a mix of company-owned trucks and privately-owned trucks. You know, and virtually all the private owners have been members of the Teamsters for a long, long time. But we have places in the state where that privately-owned truck cannot go on the real estate of a place that they have to go, and they have to take their load and spot it somewhere, and then somebody else comes and picks it up, and so on and so forth. And it's just an issue that keeps the most efficient way of delivering the freight sometimes from happening. And I'm hoping that this is such a big contract and so much work for so many people that those kind of small and arbitrary issues can go away, you know, so that no qualified Alaskans are excluded when there is indeed an opportunity for everybody to work. I'm sure I stated that awkwardly, but it's the general issue. And maybe we're way too early in this, but I certainly want us, the state, you guys, to be aware of that, and that we not do something that precludes removing those barriers.
Senator Dyson, Mike Pulowski again for the record. Appreciate that. I think the only way I can respond, and the guidance is always important, and we're open to listening, is that you made a very key statement that it's too early. It may be too early. There are so many pieces about this Heads of Agreement where we rightly recognize that until we know more about the project, until engineers really get in the room and start doing the detailed work, you really plan out the rights of way, there's just a lot that has to happen to start to solve some of those problems. What the administration's tried to do in general is come to high-level principal agreements with companies to say this is the plan of how we're going to move forward and get them to commit to move forward through that step. We'll be looking for guidance from the committees as we go forward, but again, I will always try and keep my ability to testify to things that I can offer any representation of the committee on.
Yeah. And
follow up?
Yeah, and I think I'm worrying when I shouldn't be, and so on. What I don't want to do is be a part of inadvertently approving something that precludes an option we'll have in the future. And I think your first response to my first question probably covered that. All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good. Further questions? I will see. I'm fairly confident we can get the Department of Labor here this afternoon to address this. Any other questions? All right. So at this point, I will remove my objection. This committee substitute is now before the committee then. We're going to actually adjourn at this point. This afternoon, our usual meeting is at 3:30. I am aware that there are additional amendments that will be offered at that time, and we will have the Department of Labor here. So further discussion then. So I'll adjourn at this time. The time is 8:40 a.m., and we'll meet again at 3:30. We're adjourned. I'm calling Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, February 21st. The time is 3:31 p.m. I have several committee members who are tied up at the moment, and so what I'm going to do is recess to call of the chair. So at this time, we're going to go on recess to call of the chair. Thank you. I call Senate Resources back to order after our brief recess. Let the record reflect that it is 4:40 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, Senator Machicki, Senator French. Senator McGuire is excused, and myself, Senator Giesel, is here, obviously. Ann Krekelberg is our recording secretary. Jess Hines is doing the LIO. And my staff, Lindsay Williams, is here. So this afternoon, we're taking up the CS for Senate Bill 138, Gas Pipeline. We're working off of version N, as in November. Let me just confirm that. Yes, there it is, N. And we are taking up amendments. We're taking up amendments. Senator French has a number of amendments, and then there is one housekeeping kind of amendment that will be the last one. All right, so Senator French, amendment number one is offered by you.
Yes, ma'am.
So I will allow you to introduce that.
Just so we're all clear, this should be a backslash N.1.
Yes.
And we'll style that amendment number one. I'll offer amendment number one and move it. Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. Amendment number one would take oil taxes off the table in this process. It basically inserts at several points in the bill a prohibition on including oil tax terms in a contract developed under the Act. I think it's the wisest course to prevent oil taxes from becoming a point of negotiation. When I asked the representatives of the oil industry when they were here whether they intended to make oil taxes a part of the contract discussions, in my view, they were evasive, and I think they didn't want to say yes for fairly obvious reasons. They didn't want to say no for fairly obvious reasons, and so in my view, we should save the administration the agony of being drawn into a negotiation over oil. This morning, here in the committee, we saw included in the CS a provision that would keep the commissioners from negotiating our royalty rate too low, and this is the same idea. It simply puts some sidebars on the deal. One of the concerns I've been having about the general approach of this bill is that it's very similar to the general approach taken from 1998 to 2006 under the Stranded Gas Development Act. That act is still on the books, by the way. You can find it in our statutes at AS 4382010. I was not here in 1998, but I voted for the Stranded Gas Development Act when it was reauthorized in 2003. That was a unanimous vote. But the contract that came out of that negotiation, which I keep a copy of, was a deeply, deeply one-sided contract that did not even get brought up for a vote here in the legislature. I'm hoping we learn from that chapter in our history, but I think it'll be irresistible for the industry. It'll be irresistible. They will not be able to keep themselves from pressing for and potentially winning concessions from us on the oil tax arena if that's an option. I'll just close by saying they did, after all, offer us a dime on the dollar in the pipeline valuation case. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator French. Comments? Senator Fairclough?
Madam Chair, is the administration available? I'm wondering if there is ever a reason that we would want that flexibility. Are we moving... is there a reason why we would want flexibility like that, or do we want to protect the asset that is valuable? Is the administration?
Commissioner Balash?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joe Balash, Commissioner Designee of the Department of Natural Resources. And I'd like to first say that we appreciate the sentiment being expressed here in Senator French's amendment, but I do have a concern, and it goes to the wording that casts, in my estimation, too wide a barrier. And by that I mean the language reads, may not include a provision relating to the tax rate applicable to the oil and gas production tax under 4355 as it relates to the production of oil. So while I understand the desire certainly is to keep oil out of the contract, that we not make it part of the negotiation in a direct way, there certainly are going to be some indirect matters that we necessarily are going to need to bring up, particularly as it relates to the manner in which lease expenditures are handled. And, you know, we're moving to this gross mechanism for gas, and yet still going to have lease expenditures available for deduction in the calculation of oil taxes. So indirectly, if anything is changed by the legislature over the period of the contract that relates to oil, which I think we're all in agreement we would want to leave alone, there are going to be some indirect things that may occur, and we need to provide for those things arguably as we look at the gas side of the equation. And so I'm afraid that, that this specific language would cast too wide of a sideboard and prevent us from being able to take up those indirect matters.
Follow-up, Senator Faircliff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm trying to reach back because, quite frankly, I'm getting presentations in the Senate Finance Committee on this issue and in the Senate Resource. And so one of the two committees talked about using a healthy oil industry and providing an incentive to apply credits for gas development against oil production or the credits. Am I getting that right? Help me, please.
Through the chair, Senator Faircliff, certainly we need a healthy oil business as part of the economic model here for commercialization of gas. And right now, the way we're running all of our economics are that oil is going to carry the costs of Prudhoe and Point Thomson, that the gas production itself is going to be a revenue stream that is used in the manufacture of LNG. And so the costs of operating those fields, those lease expenditures, will remain deductible on the oil side of the equation. However, let's say 15 years from now, 20 years from now, the legislature decides to adjust the tax rate or go to a gross production tax. Those kinds of changes are going to have an impact on gas indirectly, and that's what I think we need to make sure we don't erect too high an obstacle here for us to be able to deal with those things in the contracts to come.
Yes, Senator Faircliff.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if it's for the commissioner or for our actual analysts, but then is there a competitive advantage that could be lost by adopting this amendment at this particular point in time, or is there other language that we should consider to protect oil for Alaskans? Because I think that's the attempt of the amendment is to protect Alaska's oil production. But my concern, or the questions that I'm raising, is that we've heard about other entities across the world that are trying to develop gas projects, and we've heard about significant cost overruns, transportation costs, and how they're competitive in a corporate boardroom. Why would corporate America want to invest in Alaska versus other places? And one of the positives, I believe, mentioned by Larry Pursley, as well as others that have presented before us, it is that because we have the infrastructure in place for oil, and because oil can help carry some of the costs, that our project becomes better, both financially and structurally, from a physical location of all those things. So, Commissioner, I'm not sure if you can comment on that, but do I have that right? Does it need to be amended?
Through the chair, Senator Faircliff, I believe you do have it correct. If you think about our competition in Western Canada, British Columbia specifically, they have not developed the fields that are going to produce the gas that will go into the LNG projects on the west coast of Canada. So in that regard, we do enjoy a certain advantage having the infrastructure in place. But keep in mind, our infrastructure is not cheap to operate. I think the ongoing operating costs at Prudhoe Bay are significant, and those costs are going to need to continue to be borne by oil. And I think we're all relatively certain of that. The question is, what's going to happen over these next many years to the oil business? What changes might Alaska want or need to make to keep that business healthy? If we make changes, is there going to be an indirect effect on the gas business? And that's really what I'm concerned about here as I read the language. Because it's, you know, may not include a provision relating to. Well, that's a wide net. And so I'm not sure if there's a way to narrow that somehow. that would achieve the goal.
Thank you. Senator French.
I appreciate the dialogue with the administration, and my concern is that we not, having seen the Stranded Gas Development Act contract, it tied our hands, handcuffed them, mm-hmm. you know, chained us up and kept us frozen in a structure for 35 years. I think that's detrimental to the state with respect to our ability to raise or lower, if necessary, oil taxes. And so it's my desire to keep that flexibility intact. And if there's a better way to do that, I'm happy to, you know, work with the next committee. And this bill's not going to be here much longer, but you know, I appreciate the flexibility on the administration side. It is impossible to sort of not touch oil without somehow touching gas, and vice versa. But gas is going to be locked in place. I mean, I can see that coming 100 miles away, and that's clearly the intent, is to develop a long-term contract that freezes gas royalties and tax gas into one structure and leaves it that way. But oil is a different story. It's the lifeblood of the state, and if we wrap that into the contract, I think A, it's never going to pass this legislature, and B, paralyzes us unnecessarily or to our own detriment. Let me put it that way.
Thank you. Further comments? Yes, Senator Fairclough.
Madam Chair, I am Senator Bishop, and I are on the next committee. I'm happy to take up the issue. One of the other things that I'd like to see is modeling on the if we took the amendment as it's proposed, what are we losing in flexibility, and can we? I don't know if we can, but at least have the analysts take a look and see sort of the range that we're looking at for on the table of how tight we want that language to be, and what are we giving up or what are we achieving, because. Like Senator French, I think all of us want to make sure that we protect our oil industry and provide for Alaskans. But we, I hope we also understand that it is a foundation that other projects don't have. And so being able to leverage that advantage for Alaska's project is an element that is contributing to it moving forward.
Thank you. Further comments?
Just a comment.
Senator Michicki.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to bring the committee's attention to, and at least the first two sections haven't gotten to the last couple of sections, primarily page 13, line 17, where this would have been inserted. A contract negotiated under this paragraph, any contract negotiated under this paragraph to which the state is a party is not effective unless the legislature authorizes the governor to execute the contract. Mm-hmm. If you also turn to page 15, line 9, same section where the second part of the amendment was going to be added, a contract negotiated under this paragraph, any contract negotiated under this paragraph to which the state is a party is not effective unless the legislature authorizes the governor to execute the contract. If there is any change that is related to an oil tax, we would have a look at it before it would be approved and being an executable contract.
Thank you, Senator Michicki. Further comments? Any closing remarks, Senator French?
No, thank you. It was good discussion. Thank you.
Do you uphold your objection, Senator Dyson? Oh, pardon me, Senator Fairclough. Sorry.
I look a lot alike.
Sorry. Madam Secretary, if you would call the roll, please.
Senator McGuire is absent. Senator Michicki?
No.
Senator Bishop?
No.
Senator Dyson?
No.
Senator Fairclough?
No.
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator Easel?
No.
185.
All right, thank you. With that, the amendment fails. Amendment number 2, Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for clarity's, this is /N.2, and that's amendment number 2. I will move amendment number 2.
Object.
There's been an objection. Would you elaborate?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a simple amendment that inserts into the body of the bill, into the statutory part of the bill, a project labor agreement. It requires that a contract to which the state is a party must include a provision that requires the parties to negotiate a project labor agreement for construction. The language is taken from the AGEA statute. I know that there are good words about PLAs in the HOA. There's good words about PLA now in the findings section of the bill. But in my view, the best place to put it is in statute. That's the most rock-solid place to do it. And it ensures that the PLA is there in case folks, something happens in the future. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I think intent language is nice. Statutes are better. I know that I spoke with Vince Beltrami earlier today about the question that Senator Dyson raised earlier regarding the ability of non-union workers to get access to a job that's being performed under a PLA. And his remarks to me were that there's no problem there, that in-state non-union workers will be ahead of out-of-state union workers. And I think he had the same conversation with Senator Dyson. I don't want that to be the final word on the subject, but it was certainly the same answer I've gotten in years past when I've asked the same question when it came up, I think, in the small diameter pipeline. So it's a fairly consistent answer. I think PLAs are the best way to ensure, frankly, local hire, to ensure that the project stays on time and online and within a tight budget. And so for that reason, and I'm a big fan of them, and so for that reason I offer the amendment. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Comments? Senator Matucci?
I'm happy to offer a comment, Madam Chair. I, as you know, on page 4, line 13, we have a statement about to the maximum extent permitted by law, contract provisions for project labor agreements, employment of Alaska residents, contracts with Alaska businesses, and provisions to work with state job centers, associated services, and job training services was mentioned. We talked about some changes that possibly brings in the language from the MOU, or HOA, I'm sorry, for more exact record of everything that was signed by all the parties into this bill. And again, I don't think there's anyone at this table that makes a selection whether they favor union or non-union workers. I've been around large projects a little bit, and large projects like this, I said it earlier, qualified individuals in these trades, this is such a large project that union and non-union workers, Alaskan workers, will have all of the opportunities that they would ever want to work on this project. And isolating it in contractual language in the bill, I feel, is too early at this time. That's for the individual parties to work out with different labor groups later on, and I won't be supporting this amendment.
Thank you. Further comments? All right. Senator French, closing remark?
Only that if you like the idea in findings, you should like it in statute. I'm actually thinking back to a senator I served with early in my career that the commissioner knows, Senator Terrio, who was a terror on findings. He just really didn't like them. He believed that they were unnecessary, that they didn't do anything, that they didn't have the force of law. And I took that lesson to heart. And so I like findings, but findings, no one should ever confuse the legal impact of findings versus statutes. And so for that reason, I offer amendment number 2.
Thank you. Senator Matucci, do you uphold your objection?
I do, ma'am.
All right. Madam Secretary, if you could call the roll.
Senator Fairclough?
No.
Senator Matucci?
No.
Senator Dyson?
No.
Senator Bishop?
No.
Senator Fryer's absent. Senator French?
Yes.
And Chair Giesel?
No. Thank you. With that, the amendment fails. Amendment number N, November 3. Senator French.
That is amendment number 3. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll offer and move amendment number 3.
Object.
There's been an objection. If you would speak to it.
Thank you. Yeah, the purpose behind Amendment Number 3 is similar to the purpose behind Amendment Number 1. The purpose behind this amendment is to leave intact the taxing authority of municipalities across whose land this pipeline, I hope, someday runs. The idea is to leave them free to tax within, of course, statutory boundaries. They can't go outside those. but it's a way to let them deal with the impacts of construction, the impacts of an operating pipeline, let them work within their boundaries to do the best they can for their citizens. This goes back to the Stranded Gas Development Act and the onerous provisions inside that contract that tied up not only production taxes, not only royalties, not only corporate income tax, but also property taxes. And if I may, Madam Chair, I'd just read a paragraph from a letter sent and discovered after the gas Stranded Gas contract collapse by one of the architects of that, or at least one of the analysts of that contract, Pedro Van Meers. He wrote it to the governor's chief of staff in February 2006, if I may read.
Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a great letter. He said, I believe that, and I've got a copy here of the letter in case anyone wants to have a copy. It is something everybody ought to read. I believe the concept of capping municipal taxes of general application is totally unnecessary. Any reasonable evaluation of the municipal taxes in Alaska clearly indicates that the margin that municipalities have to create taxes of general application is limited. The impact of variation in municipal taxes of general application on the project economics is negligible. Therefore, in my opinion, municipalities should be free to tax as they wish, and the participants, or meaning the producers, should pay these taxes without limit. And just ahead of this paragraph, he'd written a sentence which many of us have remembered because it's so evocative. He says, there's absolutely no need to treat Alaska as a banana republic in order to secure the gas line. And so I think for that those reasons, I offer amendment number 3.
All right. Comments? I'll just offer that in the intent language in Section 1, letter A, number 5, actually speaks to this with the intent that the interests of the state and local governmental entities must be considered in contract negotiations to protect the financial and other interests of the state and those local governmental agencies. So it is fairly well articulated there. We also heard from the municipalities, from the mayors, and I think we heard loud and clear that they wish to be actually part of those negotiations, which I believe they will be. Senator Machicki?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so my former job before this one was being the mayor of a small town. Worked very closely with the mayor of our borough that was just here the other day. And I will tell you that Alaska municipalities that are impacted by the pipeline or that have part of the project going through their jurisdiction must retain the ability to tax. My thought is that will occur during the negotiations on this project. I think most of the municipalities are very favorable to that idea. We must look out for their interests, but I am hoping that the negotiations are not individual, that they're more on a party basis, or it turns into another nightmare of a different mill rate for every piece of pipe. So that's my goal. I'm not sure that the amendment gets us there. I think the intent language and findings is probably more effective, and I won't be supporting the amendment.
Further comments? Senator Fairclough.
Madam Chair, we tried to make that clear to the administration when we were talking about this, when the municipalities during public testimony brought the issue to the committee. I would just piggyback on what Senator Machicki said in that we are trying to develop a process where municipalities are part of developing that process and providing their taxing and retaining their taxing authority. But we would like that done in a way that we have a similar kind of process for each community that they go through, not trying to limit their ability, but for them to come together in a group. So I would just echo Senator Machicki that I hope that they could negotiate together with the administration to come up with that process.
Thank you. Further comments? All right. Seeing none. Let's see. Senator Machicki, Senator Dyson objected. Do you maintain your objection?
I do.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll?
Senator Bishop?
No.
Senator McGuire, absent. Senator Fairclough?
No.
Senator Machicki?
No.
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator Dyson?
No.
Senator Giesel?
No.
One day, 5 days.
All right, with that, the amendment fails. The next amendment being offered is N November 5. Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, just for housekeeping, N4, which you also have in your desks, is not going to be offered. Or maybe it didn't get distributed. But there's an N4. You should have an N4. There may be an N4. I'm not going to offer it.
Okay.
So
all right. Thank you.
So that worked out perfectly because we are up to number. You called it number 5.
Yes.
And I guess we'll keep it at 5. That's okay with the clerk and everybody. Because we just did 3. Now we're doing 5. Great. Amendment number 5, I move.
There's been an objection, if you'd like to speak to it, Senator French.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the Trans-Canada Amendment. This amendment requires that the state conduct a competitive bid process before Trans-Canada can be a party to the contract. It addresses what I believe is a quandary in the MOU with Trans-Canada that seems to grant them, does in fact grant them, a significant role to that corporation without examining any other option. I think that could wind up making bad law when we solve a problem by basically ignoring the problem. And the problem is what's left of AGEA? Where are we with AGEA? And I voted for AGEA just like I voted for the Stranded Gas Development Act. AGEA didn't work. Stranded Gas Act didn't work. I may wind up voting against this bill just to see if I'm the kiss of death. You know, and try to see if I can vote against this and get a pipeline, it's worth it. It's a small sacrifice. But seriously, I think we need a week in which we sort of delve into and conduct an autopsy on AGEA, find out what went wrong. I listened into the Finance Committee's hearing just last night when a line of questions about the open season bids resulted in only partial answers. And I think it's fair to say that most of us still don't know what went wrong. Before we invite TransCanada into this gas pipeline attempt, I think we should fully consider our options. I want to be completely clear about one thing. This is not brought about, for me at least, by any ill will towards TransCanada. Quite to the contrary. I have worked with them for a long time. I've been meeting with them consistently since 2007. I've never been anything other than impressed by their competence, their diligence, their effective. If I were going to build a pipeline, I'd probably hire Tony Palmer to do it. He knows what he's doing. But this is a $45 to $60 billion deal. It's a big show. And I don't think we know what the MOU would look like if we did not have the legal limbo of AGEA hanging over us. And if we had just sort of started from scratch with an RFP. And so I think it's worth considering, and that's why I brought amendment number 5.
Thank you, Senator French. Comments? Senator Fairclough.
I have a question of the sponsor of the amendment. Senator French, how long do you think that process would take?
That's a great question, and I don't have a ready answer for you. I mean, I wish I did, but I don't. It would certainly take some time, whether it's a week or a month or a year, I don't know. Probably closer to a week or a month, I think, but I don't want to say for certain.
Madam Chair, I was a no vote on AGEA.
On the license?
On the license, yes. I was a yes vote to send a license out and look for a qualified applicant. There was a presentation last night about value. Yeah, I assume it was partly because a question was asked in this committee about what was the value of TransCanada, the project. And then this committee has had multiple meetings on one of the values is trying to reach a market inside of 10 years. And that time really is of essence if we want to compete specifically with British Columbia projects and with other projects that are trying to reach the Asian market. And so that's why I posed the question, do we know how much time? And so I am reflective of AGEA in that process, and that I thought that took over a year to try to get that done. And for that reason, and the reasons that have been presented about value as far as TransCanada's partnership in this issue, I'm going to be a no vote on the amendment.
Further discussion. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I like Senator French very much, and I'm not even prefacing saying something negative about you. It's not one of those bless his heart things. I do, and I enjoy hearing him speak, and I think he brings up some very every issue has been important. This is another one. And, you know, I wish we would have. I wish we would have completed that process. And it's easy for me to say. I mean, I can say I would have voted with Ralph Samuels because I wasn't here. But I also can't, you know, be blamed for any of those things. Thank you. But what we have as an issue is no matter what pipeline project we would have built 25 years ago, the time value of money would have made it at a significant savings to today. Even the wrong choice could have been adjusted. How many Alaskan businesses have not occurred because of the fact that natural gas is now available? How many markets have we lost of exporting this gas? But the biggest thing is, how much more money will it cost? And you say a few weeks to for that autopsy. And I think that's probably legitimate, but an RFP process is not a few weeks. It's a long period of time. And what are we adding, Madam Chair, to this discussion? $800 million a year in increased cost as we go along this process? I won't be supporting the amendment. This bill has a long way to go in a lot of committees in which it'll be discussed, and we have input into those committees. I'm getting fairly close to pushing it along and observing what happens as it goes through the process, but stopping it at this point I don't think is something I can support.
Further comments? Senator Bishop.
Along the same lines, I would, you know, we all go back over the failed starts and stops and you know, the autopsy, how long could it take, and who knows, and the RFP process, who knows. But I know that Mid-America was here. They came and gone. Trans-Canada was the licensee. We had four incompletes and one complete. And say we go down an autopsy and an RFP, and maybe that's the right way to go. Who knows? But that RFP could then kick them to the curb, and they might not want to come back either. And we've heard our experts in the room say there's less than a handful of people in the world that could do this project. And so you've had two people that could build it that have came and been kicked to the curb, and the other three that are out there, why should I come to the dance? If, you know, so it's kind of a catch-22 right now. I'm sympathetic to the amendment, but I'll be a no vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Senator Dyson, I believe you objected. Do you uphold your objection?
I have not. I will hold back my objection. I maintain my objection.
All right. Thank you. Madam Secretary, if you call the roll, please.
Senator Dyson?
No.
Senator Machiki?
No.
Senator Bishop?
No.
Senator McGuire is absent. Senator Fairclough?
No.
Senator French?
Yes.
No. All right, thank you. With that, the amendment fails. The last amendment is N, that's November 6. This is a renumbering amendment for Section 1. Senator Fairclough noted this morning that we had some repetitive numbering in there, so this simply changes those numbers around.
Object. I'm just sort of lightening the air here. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I remove my objection.
I would like to move the amendment. Is there objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. And that concludes the amendments that we have before us today. So we have heard all of the amendments. I'm going to hold the bill until Monday morning. Our next meeting is 8 a.m. Monday morning, and so this gives folks time to actually look it over again, contemplate any other comments you might have about the bill. And so at this time, let me just make sure here there was nothing else I needed. Nope. So at this time, we will adjourn. The time is 4:56 p.m. We're adjourned until Monday morning.